Hey, Fruit Loops Pod Squad. We were unable to record this week due to some personal issues, so we are releasing another patron episode. This one is Wendy's telling of the Good Friday killings. The subjects of our patron bonus episodes are not always serial killers of color, and that is true about this episode. Also, we were still working on some sound issues when we recorded this episode, so the sound quality is not great, and for that, we apologize. We will have a new episode out for you next week before we take our winter break, and then we will be back in 2020. With all that said, let's get on with the show.
This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to our Fruit Loops bonus episode, Wendy Presents. And who are we talking about today, Wendy?
Today, we are talking about the Good Friday killings, which were committed by, I don't know, two white dudes. Their names aren't important, but we'll get into it in a bit.
I actually don't know anything about this case, so this is exciting. Okay. The idea behind these episodes, we're going to do a series of Wendy Presents and Beth Presents, is Wendy's going to tell me a story about a crime that I don't know about, and then on another episode, I'll tell her about a crime that she doesn't know about.
So, yay!
Take it away, Wendy.
You are so just... Whew, you are just on today. As the great Marianne Williamson would say, Marianne Williamson, presidential runner. I love her. I can't get enough. But she's like, girlfriend, you're so on. And that's you. So as Beth said, this is a bonus episode. This is exclusively for our Podbean patrons and our Patreons. And Fruit Loops Podcast is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color as it relates to people of color. And Wendy Presents is where I dial up my buddy Beth, aka the OG of true crime, and tell her a true crime tale. So Beth, are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm so ready.
Okay.
I'm very excited for this.
Oh my god. You should have zero expectations for like quality and thoroughness. Okay.
Okay. I just want somebody to tell me a story.
Okay. So get ready. Buckle up. So I'm Wendy, she's Beth. We're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists, just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that. Basically, our opinions. So please send any questions or comments to fruitloopspod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 602-935-6294, and we may feature it on a future episode. If you're listening to this on Podbean or Patreon, you get free tips on this episode. Woohoo! So, Beth, you already asked me who we're talking about today, and I said a very half-assed answer because you caught me off guard. But today, today we are talking about the Good Friday killings, and that is the case when two white guys who on Black Friday went on a shooting spree in predominantly Black neighborhoods killing Black people. Isn't that interesting?
Whoa,
on Black Friday,
crazy.
They killed Black people.
Yeah.
And the spree came on the anniversary of the death of one of the killer's dad. His father was killed by an African-American man, and they ended up killing three Black people, and two others were wounded. So they shot five people in total. Only three died and two survived.
Wow.
And the killers, yeah, crazy. Ask me any questions throughout. I'm excited about this conversation.
Okay.
So Alvin Lee Watts and Jacob Carl England were the two perps. And again, they're two white dudes who on April 6, 2012, committed several shootings that resulted in a handful of injured and a handful of people murdered. And okay. It turns out that England is actually part Native American, which I thought was really fascinating about the story. So they only killed people on one night, and then they were arrested 2 days later.
Okay.
So now I'm going to get into the setting. So this all took place in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Oklahoma is situated on the Arkansas River between the Osage Hills and the foothills of the Ozark Mountains in northeast Oklahoma, a region of the state known as Green Country, considered the cultural and art center of Oklahoma. The area where Tulsa, I've never been, have you?
Did not know they had one. I've been through Oklahoma, but haven't been to that art center, no.
Okay, well, the area where Tulsa now exists was considered Indian territory when it was first formally settled by the Locha Paca Indian tribe and the Creek Indian tribe in 1836. The tribe was reminded of the Trail of Tears survivors on the bend in the river and their previous Creek Council oak tree back in the Palisse, Alabama area.
I was going to ask if it was part of the Trail of Tears.
Yeah, it was. And I guess maybe I should have put a Trail of Tears things in here. But anyway, off the rip, President Andrew Jackson, you know, the one they say that 45 reminds everybody of, he was like, get all these Native Americans out of here so we can get some white people some land over there, and made thousands of Native Americans leave their homes and walk on foot to go west. And many people died, women, children, men, and it's a stain on the American history quilt. Anyway, so they decided that they were going to name this new settlement Palisse, meaning old town in the Creek language, which later became Tulsa. Because white people just decide that they don't like something and are going to rename it. Anyway, many may not also know this about Tulsa, but it has an area referred to as Greenwood, which was considered the first Black Wall Street after Reconstruction in the United States. Mm. And this is where there were many Black businesses. There were wealthy-ass Black people. Like, the whole town was full of Oprahs. And one person even had his own plane.
Wow.
It's pretty awesome when you hear a qualified person tell the story.
I think we talked about this in one of the episodes. This is all coming
back. I think we have, to too.
Yeah.
And there were actually a lot of communities like this across the United States after Reconstruction, where Black people like, we're just going to build our own communities. We're going to have our own doctors. We're going to have our own lawyers. We're going to have our own businesses. And we're just going to support each other and keep all of our money in our community. And the communities grew and prospered. But boy, oh boy, guess who didn't like it? The Klan.
White people.
The Ku Klux Klan was not very happy about this. So in 1921, they bombed the shit out of it and killed hundreds of people. Yeah. It's very sad, very sad.
Yeah.
And I've heard actually accounts of people who were there and talking about how just terrified they were.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's awful. So Tulsa had race issues really since the beginning.
Really?
Like all of America. Yeah. Like all of America that they never really dealt with. And according to the 2010 census, Tulsa has approximately 392 residents. 62% of them are white, 16% are Black, and 14% are Latinx, and about 5% are Native American. And I have not spent much time in Oklahoma, as I have said, but it has, in my opinion, a poor history in relation to Native Americans. I also know that Oklahoma has tornadoes and racism. And
tornadoes and racism.
Yeah. And there's a play called Oklahoma that fucking sucks.
Oklahoma, where the wind goes whipping down the plain.
Of course, if we have any present listeners and fans, you are definitely excluded from the fuckery in Oklahoma. And I'm sure it's a lovely place, but history has its eyes on you. Anyway, so now we're going to get into, now I'm going to tell Beth about the killer's early life. Are you ready, Beth?
I'm ready.
Okay. So Jake England, He's the guy who's part Native American, but he was raised by a single father. His dad is Carl England. His mother was out of the picture, and he had at least one sister. I think he might have had two. Reports say that the England family, again, was part Cherokee. Jake was a normal, happy-go-lucky kid who liked playing and goofing around and riding horses. Papa England was a strict disciplinarian. He had a tree trimming business, and he was a wild racist. On April 7th, 2010, Papa England got into a dispute with a tenant in his daughter's apartment complex, who happened to be a black man. This man was named Pernell Jefferson. And what actually happened was Jefferson tried to break into daughter England's house. Then Papa England and the daughter's boyfriend went looking for this black man who tried to break into their house. And they had a confrontation that led to Jefferson, the black guy, defending himself. And he shot Papa England. And if I know anything about dangerous racists, they are not so great with reason or self-control. And right. I wonder if they had maybe just called the police to deal with the break-in, maybe nobody would have died.
So they went looking for him.
Yes, they went looking for him, which I don't think is uncommon of white racists to do. Like, they just take the law into their own hands. And but I wanted to mention a side note, because I was at a mediation this week with an old ass white judge, and he was like, he always tells these courtroom war stories to try to help us all reach a settlement. Like, well, I've seen that happen. And he was talking about this case where this big ass black guy got into a fight with a teeny tiny white guy on his own property. So the black guy was on his own lawn. And the words were exchanged, and the black guy punched the white guy and like broke his jaw and injured him. And it went to a civil trial, and the jury awarded the white guy $800,000.
Oh my God.
And the point of the judge's story was to like message to us that juries are unpredictable. But I was like, pump the brakes. I said, sir, Your Honor, what was the race of the parties involved and the attorneys and the jurors? And he was like, that doesn't matter. This is the justice system playing out as it should be. And I was like, so he reluctantly told me. And because of the justice system doesn't see race. Get the fuck out of here. But I had to school him that the reason why an all-white Maricopa County jury awarded what they did on that case was because it was a black man, a menacing large black man perpetrating violence on a white guy. And when the black guy's defense was self-defense, and
it was on his property.
It was on his property. And black people aren't afforded, at least in as far as the justice system is concerned, we're not viewed as humans, especially black men, not viewed as human beings worthy of the right to defend themselves. And that is why the jury awarded that. And he was like, I'd never thought of that. I mean, he had a whole like write-up of the case, and he was like, I wrote it all down here. It was just baffling to me. I had no idea that it would put him because of his race. And then he was like, he like shook my hand. He was like, thank you so much for letting me know that this is why this happened. This verdict was an anomaly to me. And I was like, wow. Can you please tell all of your friends that this is why this happened? So you don't use this bullshit story again. Anyway. back to the story. So the black man shot Papa England in the chest, and Papa England died. And the black guy got convicted. His name was last name Pernell. He got convicted of murder and is currently in prison. So the guy served time. So the family, in theory, England's family should have been like, justice has been served. But no. The England gentleman was seething the entire time. So reports say the England family, again, is part Cherokee. Jake was a normal, happy-go-lucky kid. But once his dad died, he dropped out of high school and he took over his father's tree trimming business. But his life sort of fell apart.
Right.
As I mentioned, Papa England was a wild racist, and Jake's hatred presumably initially was taught by his father, and his hatred just grew and grew and grew. And then to add insult to injury, his fiance, Sharon Wild, she was 24 at the time, she killed herself in front of Jake.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And they had a 3-month-old son.
Oh.
So yeah. So that's very sad. Yeah. So Jake think wasn't doing so good. And he has a famous Facebook post. Facebook, I think, took it down, but you can find it anywhere on the internet. But he posted a very racist rant. And his friends were like, bruh, are you okay?
None are racist, but they're going a little too far here.
How is your spirit, Brother Jake? Do you need to be on the prayer list? And so on the 2-year anniversary of his father's death, that's when the rampage began. So England posted on his Facebook page the day before the shootings that he was enraged about the quote, and I get to say this because I'm black, fucking nigger, quote unquote, who shot and killed his father. And he added, it was hard not to go off. And again, his baby mama killed herself in front of him. And he added, it was hard not to go off. He said between that and the loss of his fiance that he was gone in the head. And so that's why his friends were like, are you okay? What's going on? And so his friend Alvin Watts saw this. He's the accomplice who was his Facebook friend. And he went to England and moved in with him and wanted to like be there for him after his fiance suicide. And even though Jake bragged about hating black people and the fact that he was armed, interestingly, his friends were surprised that he would do something like end up shooting 5 black people. I, however, am not one bit surprised and can tell you that any black person who had been in the midst of this young man could have seen this coming a mile away. But and if he had a black friend, they would have been like, bruh, you all right? Like, what's going on? So that night on Good Friday, the killers made a plan to seek out black people randomly and just kill him.
So there was no real target, just black people.
Just black people. And Jake, who's actually the younger of the two, was the ringleader. He was the most enraged. He was the most motivated. And he sort of started this whole thing. So so I would like to bring everybody into Culture Corner at this moment. Black enslaved and American First Peoples, or Native Americans, have been connected since the beginning of this nascent formation in 1619. And that's when the first black people were stolen from Africa and brought to this land. And the relationship has been both positive and negative. So one thing I've learned from this 1619 project is that some Native American tribes participated in the enslavement of African refugees and black American enslaved people. I had no idea. Cherokee specifically did own slaves, and I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think some Native tribes owned slaves. Like, they would get into wars with other tribes and take other tribe members and make them slaves. So I think that probably wasn't unusual.
Or new to them, maybe?
Yeah, right.
Maybe. I can't speak for what they did historically because I am totally unqualified to do so. But
it's not, you know, there's so many tribes in this country, and I don't know which tribes did this, but I do believe there were some tribes that did that.
Mm. Yes, thank you. So, but then some tribes were a refuge for runaway enslaved people and welcomed runaway enslaved people in their society and families. And you will find through ancestry.com that some Black Americans actually do have Native American DNA, and that has a lot to do with it.
Interesting.
So anyway, the duo drove through Black neighborhoods to look for victims to shoot. They terrorized the Black community for what was really 24 to 48 hours. And Black leaders spoke out immediately, calling the crimes racially motivated. But guess who didn't want to see or believe that this was a hate crime? I
the
won't
police?
Name names, but it rhymes with it rhymes with hype people. I have another Culture Corner. We've talked about how they sought out Black neighborhoods. And we know that Black neighborhoods, the creation of them, has been entirely intentional. by design due to redlining and infrastructure creation, freeways going through Black neighborhoods, separating the Blacks and the whites, or train tracks. Intentionally, they are quarantined.
Divided.
Yes, yeah. Divided from the rest of society. So when people are like, I just saw this in a lot of articles, they looked for Black neighborhoods. They were easy to find because of deep societal infrastructure settings.
Right.
So, Beth, are you ready to get into the timeline?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Okay. So,
Splash,
yes. Dive in. Okay. Do I have my swimming cap on? At 1:03 a.m. on April 6, 2012, Tulsa police were called to a home in Tulsa where Danair Fields, she was 49, was found in a yard with gunshot wounds. She was taken to St. John Medical Center, where she was pronounced dead. Danair Fields, 49 years old. And this was the only victim that I was able to find like a lot of information on, including her obituary. But she was a petite Black woman who loved going on walks. She did struggle with addiction throughout her life. She stood for justice, and she knew the streets very well. She was married to Kenneth Fields, who, by the way, has not forgiven the killers. She also liked to play bones with her neighbors. And do you know what bones is, Beth?
Is it a dice game?
Dominoes.
Dominoes. Okay.
Yeah. So let me get into another culture corner for you. So bones is a game Black and brown people play to pass the time at parties, et cetera, et cetera. My grandpa showed all of his granddaughters how to play. So I know how to play bones, but I am terrible at it.
So is bones is a game that you play with dominoes?
Yes.
Because I've played dominoes before, but there's different ways to play it. So is bones one of the ways that you play it?
That's how people in color play it. So so to score, and I don't know how whites play dominoes. I've never seen it before. So
we used to play it on camping trips.
Well, so every time you have to score in multiples of five, is that how you guys play?
You know what? I don't remember. There was a couple of different games we played. One of them was called Mexican Train.
Whoa. Whoa. Put the problematic siren on.
All I can say is that's the name of the game. That's all I can say.
So with bones, you have to put the matching you have to do matchy matchy, and the wings, the domino like board, are how you score, but you only score if it's a multiple of five. And it's, I think I suck at it because I'm really bad at math, but there's like houses, and there's a boneyard. Like, I can't make a play, you gotta go to the boneyard. If you get bones, you like slam the domino down and like break the table, like throw it up in the air, and like everybody's like, whoa! It's like pouring squatties all over you. It's crazy.
That does not sound familiar.
Okay. Just in my neighborhood.
We played dominoes with tea and cookies, and screaming. No, just kidding. I'm just trying to think of all the super white things I could be doing.
Yeah. Did you guys have watercress sandwiches on these camping trips?
Oh, of course.
This is a total tangent. I was in the Brothers and Sisters program because I my parents were divorced for quite some time. And it was this older white lady who I had nothing in common with, but she would take me to like tea at like these fancy schmancy restaurants where they had high tea. And she was like, isn't this amazing? And I, in my head, was like, this fucking sucks. And I would like totally lie and be like, oh, I'm away from my like super dysfunctional family. Yeah, it's totally fine.
She was trying to culture you.
Then she should have come to my garage that evening where everybody was playing bones. Then we would have cultured her. So So now back to the timeline. Sorry, tangent. So at 1:03 a.m., Tulsa police found two shooting victims about two blocks away from Daenerys, where her body was found, on East 51st Place North. This was minutes after Mrs. Fields' body was found, as I mentioned, and they were taken to hospitals in critical condition, but expected to survive, police said. At the time of this report, their names were not released, but we know who they are. At 1:50 a.m., paramedics arrive and treat and transport a shooting victim named Bobby Clark at the 300 block of West 63rd Street North, but he was pronounced dead at the hospital. And other murder victims, the other two people who died other than Daenerys, I couldn't find information about them. Now, if this was Beth's case, she probably could have found info on them like in 5 seconds. But so anyway. So David Hall, 51-year-old black man at the time, was one of the black men who was shot, and he ended up surviving. Shortly after midnight, he was on his front porch at his friend Dion Tucker's place. These are the two dudes who survived. A white Chevy pickup pulled up, and these two white dudes asked for directions. And as Tucker stood up to answer, the men in the truck opened fire. Hall heard three to four shots, and he fell to the ground. He thought he was shot in the head. And then he said that at another point during the whole fiasco, he jumped up and then he got hit in the stomach again and he went down. Oh. Hall and Tucker, again, were the only two survivors of the spree. Wow. Remember, the three murdered were Danair Fields, she was 49, Bobby Clark, 54, and William Allen, he was 31. So police said, they were like, we've never seen this much killing in a short period of time. Now, note, this was after the Oklahoma City bomb. And then on top of that, I was like, how can they say that? The Klan has a very known presence in Oklahoma. Like, how have they not seen racial killings before? They're fucking liars. Anyway, detectives interviewed people Friday afternoon in the neighborhoods where the shootings happened and believe that a white man driving a white pickup truck may have been involved.
Did they know there was two people, or were they just looking for one at that point?
That's a good question. I don't have an answer for you. They were just looking for a white guy in a pickup truck.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the FBI was also involved in the investigation. Wow. But I don't know how involved, because the articles didn't specify. So anyway.
Do you know when they got pulled in?
I think it was right away. This case made national news. Do you remember it?
When did this happen? No, when did this happen again?
2012.
No, I don't remember this at all.
I guess I vaguely do. And now that I'm like immersed in the case because I've been researching it all for the past couple weeks, I guess I do remember news reports. But it is coming back to me. But part of the information that I got from the case was video of news reports, and it was national news. So big deal.
Okay. Yeah.
So the police arrested the diabolical duo after receiving an anonymous tip at 2 a.m. on Sunday that the two were apprehended at their home without incident. The police recovered a weapon, but they couldn't tell who fired the shots. And we'll learn later. Well, I'll just tell you now. It's because the dudes were taking turns and they were like trying to like see who could kill the most black people.
Oh my God.
And the fifth person they shot, I guess, was the tiebreaker.
Oh God.
Anyway, yeah, disgusting.
So who won?
I don't know. I don't know.
Who's the biggest asshole? Who won the biggest asshole award?
Yeah, they're both the actual biggest losers. And they didn't have to lose anyway.
Yeah, jeez.
So England was the younger one. Watts was in his 30s. Both men were charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder and 2 counts of shooting with intent to kill and 5 counts of malicious intimidation or harassment on account of race, a.k.a. hate crime. The men were arrested. They were taken into custody. Their bond was $9.1 million. They obviously couldn't make it. And the authorities spent their sweet ass time calling this for what it was, which was a hate crime and domestic terrorism.
Right.
And meanwhile, on an episode we're going to record tomorrow about Chris Dorner, the media immediately called that one a domestic terrorist situation.
Yeah, yeah. Did they ever call it a domestic terrorism?
No, they never called it domestic terrorism.
They never did.
Never. They did call it a hate crime, but okay, never well, domestic terrorism. I guess it's better than nothing, but yeah, it's but still so. Not what it is.
Right.
Entirely. The killers, whose names really aren't important at this point, at first they pled not guilty, but they ended up accepting plea agreements in December, 8 months after the killing. And they got life without parole, and so they didn't have to get, you know, death sentence.
The death penalty.
Yeah. And actually, the two surviving black guys who were shot were like, we don't want them to get the death penalty. Who does that help?
Yeah, that's too easy.
Yeah, exactly.
It also saves us money.
So. That's true. And I didn't realize that before getting into this true crime train. I thought that the death penalty would actually save money, even though I know that there's a lot of people who are locked up and shouldn't be. But I assumed by keeping people locking up that it was costing a lot of money for taxpayers. But it's the complete opposite.
Right. And then also, if they accepted a plea, then there was no trial, and that saved money too.
Right, right. So I wanted to define hate crimes. Now, this is the FBI's definition. A hate crime is a prejudice-motivated crime which occurs when a perpetrator targets a victim because of their membership in a certain social group or race. And in Oklahoma, they define it as malicious intimidation or harassment on account of race, color, ancestry, or national origin. And each state apparently has their own frickin' definitions, which is fucked up.
Bullshit.
To me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're in prison. This spree affected everybody, the entire community, the families of the decedents, and those who survived after they were shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the dude Hall, he couldn't work for 2 years, and currently he's in poor health. Tucker, the other guy who survived, had to have the bullet cut out of his back, but he still lives in the same house where he was shot, which I don't know if I could do.
Well, you would if you couldn't afford to move.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true. Oh, man.
Be like, yeah, you have no choice. Okay, I guess I'm going to do that.
Fine. Okay. That racism discussion has. We don't have time to get into it. This is a quick bonus episode. So the living survivors, again, I mentioned, have forgiven English. I think in general, Black people are an accepting, loving, and forgiving people. And Andrew T. of the podcast, Yo, Is This Racist? I wanted to say this because I thought this was very profound. And he says this repeatedly. Black people in the United States are just looking for equality and justice. Just imagine if they were seeking revenge.
Oh, wow.
That's a bomb.
Yeah.
That
is a definite bomb. Yeah.
Whoa. When I heard that, I was like, ooh, stop the car. So a family friend of English, her name is Susan Evanstar, and she's trash, and we'll get into why. She was like, if anybody is trying to say that this is a racial situation, they just got things confused. She was like, England is Cherokee Indian. He didn't care what your color was. He wasn't a racist. This wasn't a racist thing. Which to that I say, Miss Evanstar, you are trash. And the mere fact that you are not able to see the deadly oppression that this man was capable of and perpetrated on 5 victims of color is a problem and shows just how racist you yourself might be, ma'am. We said before on Fruit Loops that you can argue that anyone and everyone is capable of racism and doing racist things. But the ones who get the most benefit are the ones who created the very notion of race, which is white people, and white adjacent people, which is what I would call English, even though he has Native American ancestry.
Have you seen pictures of him?
Yeah.
And does he look like totally white?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't look totally white.
Oh, he doesn't?
No, really? I didn't think so. I saw him and I was like, What's he got in there? What's going on in that DNA?
He's a little brown, huh?
He's a little bit brown, yeah. But I guess England was very torn up about it. He felt very bad, and he wrote a letter to the victims' families and to the community apologizing for attacking innocent people. And during his sentencing, he made eye contact with the family members, and he read them a letter. And he stated in it that he was sorry that these innocent people got caught up in his chaotic, self-destructive downward spiral. Watts didn't say a word during sentencing.
Wow.
Rob Nye was England's attorney, and he said his client had tremendous remorse for what happened. He offered an apology to the, again, entire community, and the attorney thought he meant it. And I guess he thinks about this every day of his life, whatever. So they're locked up. And in this case, the justice system did work. So before I get into my takeaways, do you have any, or do you want me to go first?
You go first.
Okay, so here are my takeaways. So the community was like super surprised about this racist ass act, and I wasn't. And their surprise is extremely surprising to me. Willy Wonka says there's no better prize than a sewer prize. But sir, Tim Harris was the district attorney, and he was also someone who conveyed how he felt shame, surprise, and sadness over the shootings in his community, and he hopes never see it again. But I was watching his press conference wondering, like, how many times has this white guy used the N-word or any other hateful, ignorant language to anyone who wasn't like him in the past 6 months to a year? I don't know, but it was a thought that I had. And the attorneys for the perps tried to get the venue changed from Tulsa, which was, I kind of mentioned earlier, as far as Oklahoma goes, a more diverse place, to somewhere far removed from Tulsa, like Pawnee County is where they tried to move it. Now, their attorney didn't say this out loud, but we know why. I have never been to Oklahoma, as I've said numerous times throughout this podcast, but shout out to Crystal, and she is one of the hosts of my favorite podcast, The Read, and it's about Black culture. But she is from Oklahoma, and she talks about how racist the state is in general, but how she grew up in Tulsa, and her dad's an attorney, and she was privileged in that she was educated and had both parents and wasn't poor, and she's queer, and she had queer Black friends around her. So my impression is that Tulsa, as far as Oklahoma goes, is more diverse than we think, but racism is still very present there. And for me, also, I was disappointed that I couldn't find as much information as I wanted to about the victims when I went to Google Isha. And again, Beth could probably find she could probably find their social security numbers in 5 seconds. But I don't know about that. I think the most surprising thing was that one of the men involved is Native American, and this is Fruit Loops, a podcast about serial killers of color. And I went into this not knowing that one of them was
part Native.
Yeah, but that was interesting. So what do you think?
Yeah, that surprised me too, in that he didn't look like a white guy, because I assumed if he was friends with the other guy who was a total racist, that he would look white.
Right.
So what do you think was the motivation, Watts' motivation? Did you find anything about that?
I didn't find anything about that, but Watts was a friend of English. And Watts is a Lily. Like, me and my husband always joke about, like, serial killers, how they have three names. And this guy, his middle, he has a first, middle, and last name, which we all do, but nobody uses it. And with serial killers, they do.
Right.
And when you see the picture next to the three names, you're like, oh yeah, that guy's a serial killer. And when you look at his mugshot, his mugshot to me appeared like it wasn't like he was incapable of hating people of color and doing bad things to them. And I shouldn't say that out loud, but that was my impression. Hmm. He just looked like a regular white guy who maybe did the occasional meth on the weekends, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I was wondering if he maybe resented the fact that he was part Cherokee or something like that.
English,
angry.
The native guy.
You're talking about the native guy.
So the native guy was... I thought he was actually kind of handsome, healthy looking. I know he had had a rough recent go about things, but I really just think it was being angry about his father's life being taken by a Black person.
It's a horrible, horrible case. I mean, just the idea of these guys just coming through the neighborhoods and shooting people, just, it's kind of like the Phoenix shooters.
Oh, yeah.
I was so scared.
Really?
When that was happening. Yeah, because it was so random.
Right. And it was at the same time as Godot, too. So it was like, nobody was safe.
Yeah. But I wasn't as scared of the baseline killer as I was of the shooters, because mm-hmm. I don't know. It just seems so random. You could be walking down the street and somebody just shoots you. Whereas, yeah. you know, if you're attacked by Godot, I don't know. It seemed like there were things you could do to make yourself safer, but mm-hmm. it didn't seem like that with the shooters. Mm-hmm. Like you're just sitting on your front porch with your friend, knocking back a couple of beers, and these guys come and shoot you. You know, it's just scary.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just minding my beeswax, playing Bones, drinking an Old English, and this motherfucker comes up asking for directions and then shoots me.
Yeah, and you get up to give him directions because you're a nice guy.
That's a nice guy. These guys awful. That is a good point. These black people who they hated so much were displaying kindness to them, and they still
shot him.
Yeah, that is a really good observation. Thank you, Viv. Yeah. So, that's it for the story. I did my best, and by best, I mean B+ effort.
No, it was good. It was good.
Okay, so now we're at the shout out portion of our show, and I'm going to shout out Black Lady Sketch Show on HBO. Have you heard of it on HBO?
I have not.
Oh my God! So, it's on HBO, and it's fucking hilarious. The cast is all black women actors. It's all black women writers, and it's a sketch show about black ladies' lives and our experiences and existences. It's like SNL, but like more enjoyable for me because I'm a black woman.
Right.
And yeah. There are amazing cameos by like Angela Bassett, Loretta Devine, doing drugs. David Alan Greer from SNL and all the things. And Issa Rae from HBO's Insecure. And my favorite sketch was the one where there was this black lady who was a spy, and she was the most successful spy because the world basically, she was just invisible to the world.
Everybody ignored her.
So she got away with everything, assassinations, thefts, stealing the cheat codes, the nuclear codes.
Oh my gosh.
That's so funny. I was like, oh my God, that's my experience.
Well, it sounds like I'm going to have to sign up for HBO again.
Yeah, it is so funny. Now, normally we get into news, but I don't have any because I don't feel like it.
Yeah, that's okay. We don't have to do that on bonus episodes.
Okay. I'm going to tell you guys where you can find us. So our website is fruitloopspod.com. Our Facebook page is fruitloopspod. And our discussion group is fruitloopspod on Facebook. We're also on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at fruitloopspod. And our links to the sources of this episode will be in our footnotes. If you want to support the show, you can give us a donation on the Cash App, or you can become a monthly patron through our Podbean Patron page. This will help us pay for things like our website and pod hosting. There's no minimum and no commitment. Even a dollar would help. We also have merch on our website, Mom Please Buy a Mug, at fruitloopspod.com/merch.
This is a bonus podcast, and new episodes drop every, I don't know. So until next time, look alive, guys. It's crazy out there.